Welcome to the Excel Pod. Hey, everyone, and welcome to a brand new series of road trips, Navigating Life with Jesus. How do we as young adult Christians live a countercultural life? That's what we'll be discussing over the next few weeks on the show. In today's episode, Daniel Daub joins me once again to talk about countering our current climate of anger and rage. It seems that every time you open social media or watch the news, there is something to be angry about. As Christians, what are we supposed to do about that? What should I do if I'm struggling in this way? We talk about this and so much more on this week's episode. I'm Tyler Wall, and you're listening to Road Trips. All right, Daniel Daub, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, brother. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, you were the guest on one of my favorite episodes that we've ever done on the show. And we talked a little bit about your podcast, For Your Sunday Morning Drive. And you recently released an episode called Cruciform Rebranding. And I just love the title. And it came in the wake of the great Cracker Barrel controversy that really got a lot of people outraged and upset. I didn't know people were this emotionally tied to Cracker Barrel. So I will put the link to it in the show notes. But Cruciform Rebranding, can you just talk a little bit about that episode? What went into that? You know, what were you thinking? What were you hoping to accomplish with it? What were you hoping to convey to people with that episode?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm right there with you. Whenever that whole news story broke or in the cycle of it breaking, I just sat back and I said, really, you know, this is a, you know, we used to call it a slow news day when stuff like that got picked up in the news cycle. And anymore, it just seems that there's this outrage over any small thing like this. So with that episode, part of the inspiration came from just seeing how many people in general, but then also how many of our brethren were just getting caught up in this storm of outrage, right? Especially when there are so many other important things going on. It seems like everything anymore is kind of viewed from this lens of controversy. Really, the push behind that episode was hoping to kind of, I guess, stem the tide or maybe open people's eyes a little bit to the idea that we don't need to give our two cents on everything. It seems like such a distraction from what is important. Mm-hmm. And so many people got caught up in it. And I think one of the things that really kind of caught my attention is that there was this really weird and kind of gross connection that many people were making between a company backpedaling on their branding and something of actual spiritual significance. And I think the two couldn't be further apart. And I think the fact that so many were briefly distracted from the mission and we showed some of us our true colors behind that, right? I think it lends to supporting that instead of focusing on what Jesus told us to worry about. We're caught up in the worldly. And I guess my hope behind that and my hope and prayer is that those who listen to it might maybe reevaluate what's really important and maybe take a look at modeling ourselves after Jesus. And that's an ongoing process, right? Maybe we realize some things just aren't worth the time that they take away from our mission.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. The whole controversy with it. I love this quote. There were a lot of good quotes from it, but you said, can we really imagine that God is looking down from heaven, smiling and telling us, yes, Christian, railing against these things is a great use of your time. I think that's, I love it. I love it. It's just to the point. I mean, I think that's what it comes down to is one, are you really making the best use of your time? Are you redeeming the time because life is short? The brevity of life is short, as we've all learned and as we've all experienced and been witness to. And then also, do I really have to say something about every little thing that comes up in the world? And we'll talk about this, but this didn't happen too long ago, the whole Cracker Barrel thing, but we've all forgotten about it. I mean, yeah. This was just a month ago, because now now it's the Super Bowl halftime show. Mm-hmm. And now it's Taylor Swift's new album. And I guess if we're constantly looking for the next thing to rant about or to say that this thing is wrong, it's like, yeah, well, like no joke.
You'll find it. You'll find it if you're looking for it, right?
Exactly. It's the world. You're going to find something wrong with the world or something wrong that's going on with culture. I mean, have you read the New Testament? I mean, that's just mm-hmm. that's just how it's going to be. And I think, too, the other thing, time, constantly having to have an opinion about every little thing. I think, too, something deeper and more reflective, and I think this kind of hits at me more, is are we simply looking for reasons to express our anger because we're angry at something that's completely different? I've got a relationship that's off. I've been struggling with a certain sin. Am I just looking for reasons to go on Facebook, to go on Twitter or X, just to show that I'm angry at this thing, but I'm actually angry at something that's completely different? Is there something that's going on that's deeper within me, and I'm just expressing it? I'm just taking it out on something else.
Or the other aspect of that, I think, is we see everybody else caught up in it, and we've been biding our time to really snipe a point at somebody, but we don't have the courage to talk to that person face to face. So we use that wave of outrage to just blast it out there and say, well, I hope they see this. And I mean, come on. You know, that's not what the New Testament teaches at all about reconciliation. Or handling our problems, or loving one another. It's just, I think it's just such a smokescreen that the enemy puts out there, and we buy into it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Matthew 18, for brother sins against you, go and tell them your fault. Not make passive-aggressive posts on Facebook. Speaking of, what would you say, are some of the contributing factors to this culture of anger and rage?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is such a big question, right? I think a lot of it comes down to how instantly reactionary everything has gotten. I'm going to make myself sound really old when I say this, but it wasn't that long ago that I can remember having an argument with a friend and having to stew on that the entire way home from school on the bus. And then when I got home, I had to make the decision, am I either going to call them on the phone and talk to them? Or am I going to stew on this for the rest of the time until I get there tomorrow and talk to them face to face? I had a whole day to cool down. But anymore, it's, you know, we pull out these, we pull out our cell phones, right? And if something upsets us, we can either instantly clap back to somebody through text message or whatever the case might be, or we can run. And what a lot of us do, and myself, I've done it before, right? We run to social media. Before we even have a chance to really process and think, the immediacy of the moment is so important. And then you partner that with the anonymity and the distance that comes from social media. And it's just really a dangerous situation. You know, Proverbs 29:11, it says, a fool always loses his temper, but a wise person holds it back. And I think there's some wisdom, of course, in that, you know, take some time. And, you know, I also think that there are so many, and I'm going to group myself in there sometimes too, right? That we value being right or being on what we perceive to be the right side of things. We value that more than we do being godly. And I think Satan loves that, right? I think he really enjoys that we get angry and we start to act before we think. One of my favorite books is The Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis. And if you don't mind, I'm going to read a small section of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it really applies. He says, but remember, the only thing that matters is the extent to which you separate the man from the enemy, from God. It does not matter how small the sins are, provided their cumulative effect is to edge the man away from the light and into the nothing. Murder is no better than cards if cards can do the trick. Indeed, the safest road to hell is the gradual one, the gentle slope, soft underfoot. Without sudden turnings, without milestones, and without signposts. And that's what's happening. We're getting caught up in the small things. And, you know, we tie that back to what Jesus said in Matthew 5 about murder, right? That you shall not murder is what people were told, but we're not even to be angry at our brother without cause, right? And he kind of equates the things.
Yeah, yeah, you said a lot of good stuff. And I think that just to kind of summarize it, it's the fact that everybody has a platform for us to express this. The first thing you see when you open Facebook is what's on your mind. And I'm like, you do not want to know. I'm like, what's on my however many Facebook friends do not need to know what is on my mind. And if we're so reactionary, if we're constantly reacting instead of responding, then that's gonna make us just right in line with everyone else. Then that's gonna make us feed into and kind of work into this culture. And I said before we recorded that there's this, it's just a constant humming of anger and rage that's in our culture. And I think it's because we all have this platform for us to express it. And it's like, it's so easy to just say whatever you want behind a keyboard and just go about your day like nothing's happening. Yeah. Or that nothing's really going on in your life. Like, I'm just out shopping for clothes, and at the same time I'm having an argument with someone on Facebook about politics. Right. And it's like, that's just not how conflict should be resolved. That's just not how we're intended to handle these kinds of things. And so, yeah, there's we're going to talk about social media next week, but there is some good in it. But sure, at the same time, it has given everyone this platform to express just how angry they are and just how full of rage they actually are.
Yeah. And with that, like, just going back to it again, right? There's something to be said in the old saying that cooler heads prevail. You know, if we take a moment and we just kind of step back from things, it puts it in perspective. And man, that's something that we just can't lose sight of.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned a proverb, and I think that the Proverbs are full of great sayings when it comes to this topic. What are some other scriptures we can go to on this topic that show the dangers and or solutions to this problem that we've got?
Yeah, I mean, whenever I was looking at this, there's just so many, right? There, the Bible, especially Proverbs, is just full of warnings against the danger of anger, and especially what can come out of that. But one of the ones that really stuck out to me is, you know, we just mentioned Matthew chapter 5, 21 and 22, where Jesus he's giving that Sermon on the Mount, and he's telling people, you know, you shall not murder. Whoever commits murder shall be answerable. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be answerable for that. I was talking to a brother last night, and we kind of circled around James chapter 1, 19 and 20. And it says, "You know this, my beloved brothers and sisters, everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. For a man's anger does not bring about the righteousness of God." And one of the things he said that really stuck out to me, he goes, "Daniel, this is not a proverb." Right? It's not a general truth, because a lot of times we just focus on verse 19 and we don't ever get to the verse 20 where it talks about the anger of man not bringing about the righteousness of God. Let's connect that back to Matthew chapter 5, right? Anger and what comes out of it cannot produce righteousness. And, you know, it links back to all of that. And James, I think, certainly understood that. It's not just a proverb. It's not just a general truth. It's not something that we can just plug in there, but we're meant to really ingest that into our lives and understand that our purpose is to bring about the righteousness of God in every aspect of our lives.
Yeah, yeah. I had that exact verse written down, and that's so true. And I think so often it's the opposite. It's quick to speak, quick to become angry, and very slow to hear. And it's like, the thing that your teachers or just your parents or your teachers would tell you, God gave you two ears and one mouth for a reason. You need to listen twice as much as you speak. I love that. And as someone who likes to talk and talk a lot and talks for a living, that can be kind of hard. But I think when it comes to this topic and this idea of anger, it is really important to just practice the quiet, practice the listening, because if we want to bring about the goodness and the righteousness of God, that's not going to be produced by us being angry. And you mentioned Matthew chapter 5, Jesus has that great statement about anger. There's also that connection with Cain and Abel, because before Cain murders Abel, he's angry. He's angry about the sacrifices that somehow or that aren't pleasing to God, whereas Abel's are. And God is like, Cain, you need to be careful. You're angry. You need to be careful. And what does that lead to? And anger is something that starts small but can end in just nothing good. James says it does not produce the righteousness of God. It can lead to resentment and bitterness. And as we've seen in the last couple of weeks, it can lead to violence. And that's the worst kind of thing that it can lead to. But unfortunately, we've seen that. We mentioned the Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. I was thinking about that phrase, stirs up, because I just think about our culture and our climate, and we see a lot of stirring up, and that's kind of what harsh words do. They stir up. They get people fired up. But here it says a soft answer turns away wrath. And then Proverbs 14:29, whoever is slow to anger has great understanding, but he who has a hasty temper exalts folly.
Yeah.
So being slow to anger is connected to wisdom.
It is. And we think about that, right? Especially Proverbs 14:29, where it talks about one who is slow to anger has great understanding, and one who is quick-tempered exalts foolishness. And then that whole idea about a gentle answer turning away wrath, think about Jesus, right? He never reacted or responded in a way that a lot of his adversaries expected him to. And we even see it right in Scripture. How many times were the Pharisees or others testing him? And his response, it didn't lead, in some senses, to more outrage. It left them silent, didn't it? I mean, it the end of the day, we see that accumulating in his crucifixion. But in the immediate setting of it, I mean, we just need to take note of that. I also think Ephesians 4:26-27, be angry and do not sin, and do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity. I think this presents a really big lesson here for us. That yes, it is possible to be angry, but we have the responsibility to not let that lead us to sin, which is a lot of times we use anger in and of itself as an excuse to why it causes us to sin. When at the end of the day, that's our decision, right? Someone says, well, why did you do this? Well, you made me angry, or I was angry and that's why I did something. But it's possible to be angry and not sin. And we have that responsibility as the Lord's people.
Yeah, those are good points. And like you said, the Bible is just full of passages on this. I would encourage anyone, and we'll talk about this, that's struggling with this or thinking about this, to just simply go to the Scriptures, because it is just so full of wisdom and understanding for us in that topic. And of course, everything else too. I want to kind of switch gears a little bit and talk about engagement. How can we maybe engage in peaceful dialogue with others, whether that's in social media or, as we've talked about, preferably in person, while still maintaining that Christ-likeness and identity as a Christian?
Man, I love this question. There's a lot to unpack there. And I'm all for dialogue. I think broadly, that is how we must navigate through some of these differences that we might have with people, right? And we certainly can't share the message of Jesus without dialogue. But I think there are two important aspects here. And one of those is if we choose to engage with certain things at all. Because the beautiful thing about free will is that we don't have to engage, right? We don't have to engage with certain things if we know where they're going to lead us. And we partner that free will with a little bit of self-awareness, and man, we've got a golden combo right there. When we look at something that we see or that we hear, and the end result is either going to be more ungodly outrage or an argument, we don't have to engage with it. Because, and I'm sure that you feel this as someone that regularly sits behind a microphone or stands in a pulpit, I have to ask myself, who am I to think that everyone needs to hear my opinion? Maybe they don't. And Jesus himself says, blessed are the peacemakers, right? That's the end goal. And the other aspect of that is that we can set the rules for engaging in dialogue ourselves. We look at, like I said earlier, Luke 14, Matthew 22. Jesus often didn't react or answer in ways that people wanted him to or expected him to. And because of that, his accusers fell silent. The other aspect, I guess point number two on that, is if we are going to engage in dialogue at all, it takes two people, right? And the question I think we have to ask is, are we really engaging in dialogue, or are we just kind of blasting stuff out there and hoping that it gets put in front of some eyes? Because, you know, sometimes, let's be honest, we all do it. We pick up our phones, we glance over something, and then we hit that share button in order to maybe perpetuate the current rage topic. That's not dialogue. That's just pushing that wave further and further along. It's just kind of blasting something out there into the universe. And man, I hope this doesn't come across as hateful or just because that's not the way I mean it. Sometimes it makes us feel like we've done something important, or maybe it makes us feel as if we are important. But if it doesn't meaningfully engage another in a conversation that could either lead to peace or to that person's salvation, then is it worth it? What have we really accomplished?
That's so good. I don't know if anything else I could add to that besides just the fact that we were all taught to think before you speak. And sometimes we don't always think before we post or think before we do engage. I've seen some people that, and by the way, you know, I've seen people, Christians, who have handled this social media engagement really, really well. And it has motivated me and inspired me. But at the same time, when our intention is to just say, I'm going to repost this, I'm going to say this, just because I know that there's a person out there who may think a certain way and I want them to think the right way, which is my way. It's like, does that really do any good? You mentioned blessed are the peacemakers, what Jesus says in the Beatitudes. There's a difference between making peace and arguing so that you know that I'm right. Right. There's a big difference between that. And I think just some basic common things that we forget is that every person is made in the image of God. We do not have the right to speak to people in a way that is dishonoring and not loving. And that's what showing honor is all about. Showing honor to all people is all about. And mm-hmm. I think too, knowing when conversations should be had in person, which as we talked about, yes, is most of the time they need to be had in conversation. And you mentioned this at the beginning, so often we're talking about each other, but we're not talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we need to get back to. If a brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you two, not go post about it to your thousands of friends on Facebook who probably all agree with you anyway. So,
right. Yeah. Not so really, what have you accomplished?
Right. You're not really doing a whole lot of good when we do that. I'm preaching on Jesus and the woman who is caught in adultery. And our friend Wes McAdams brought this up in one of his podcast episodes. You know, in that scene, there's only one person who talks to the woman, and that is Jesus. Mm. He is the only person who talks to the woman herself. Everyone else is talking about her. Everyone else is talking about what should be done. And Jesus, what are you going to do to this woman? Jesus talks to the woman, which is just a good reminder of who our role model is here in this life.
That is so important. If we look at that and we have to, you know, you mentioned maintaining our identity of Christ, but, you know, we have to ask ourselves, would Jesus find this important? What would his reaction be to this based on what we know of his character and God's purpose in Scripture? And based on that answer, is this a waste of the time that I've been given to engage with this? If so, or if not, then does the outcome of that glorify God? Does the outcome of that glorify God? Because what I found, and man, I'm caught up in it too sometimes, is we've become, as a culture, more focused on winning arguments than I think winning souls. And that is a loss of, it's a detriment to the mission.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you tell someone who may be struggling with this, or maybe they're thinking, maybe I do struggle with this. I'd kind of like to know if I am or not. Or maybe, yeah, I know that I am. I know that it's wrong. What would you tell someone who's struggling with this?
I think that it's important that they know that, hey, this is a shared experience. If someone tells you that they've never struggled with this, I'm convinced that that person isn't being completely honest. I would just say, just be cautious, and not in a fearful way, but just go about your life in a way that is questioning our motives for doing things, for the things and the ways that we choose to interact with others, glorifying God and leading people back to the cross. And you know, yeah, this is the typical answer, but pray about it. It's an answer for a reason, right? You go to God and you say, hey, I'm struggling with this. One thing I've found to be extremely useful is find a level-headed, underline that, level-headed brother or sister in Christ. It's important that you seek out someone that can be a sounding board to you, someone that's going to give wise counsel, that it needs to be someone that isn't going to continue to stoke those flames. And one thing I've found really useful is to make sure that that person is not just an echo chamber, because that leads to us feeling justified about everything that we say. You need the kind of friends and the kind of brothers and sisters that are going to say, wait a minute, let's back up here and look at if what we're doing is really glorifying God. And above all, just take some time and slow down before you react, or maybe just don't react to certain things. If this is something you struggle with, the other aspect of that is, you know, don't beat yourself down because of it. It takes time to cultivate the fruit of the Spirit, and part of that is peace and self-control. And whenever we look at peace and self-control, that's, for me at least, it's going to be a lifelong process of developing that perfectly. And none of us do it perfect all the time, but that's not an excuse not to be better.
Yeah. Yeah. Really goes back to all that we've been talking about. And something that I wrote down is if you need to just take a break. And I think that you were alluding to this. I know of a lot of people, I do it most days of the week, but most of the time I try to have Facebook and Instagram, the apps, off my phone and just use them on my computer, because usually I'm not on my computer just while I'm standing in line at the store or whatever. That's something that's been really helpful for me. And I think for some, it may be something to where I got to take a week long break. I got to take a month long break. Like, social media will still be there when you come back. Trust me. Like, it'll be there. It's okay. You're not missing out on too much at all. And I think kind of going into that, I think just practicing our disciplines are so important. Practicing our spiritual disciplines are so important. You mentioned prayer. And I think just going along with that, how about just being bored, being silent, being quiet, and being alone in the quiet and just contemplating God and who he is and reflecting on his character and his love and praying prayers that maybe aren't as intercessory as like, God, I need this, I need this, I need this. How about just telling God who he is and telling him that, God, I love you. You're the creator. You're all of these things. Because I've found that when I'm contemplating who God is and what he's done for me, man, that does so much to take away any sort of anger or resentment or bitterness or ungratefulness, all the filthy that I want to take away out of my life. When I contemplate the love of God and who he is and what he's done, man, that'll take it away in an instant. And it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And even further than that, you know, when we talk to God in prayer, talk to him about this rage, right? Talk to him about the anger we might be feeling, and not in the sense that, you know, God, I want you to smite those that I perceive as my enemies, but this is how I'm feeling. These are the things I'm struggling with. These are the things on my heart. God, help me to, you know, it's a conversation that you're having with God. He can handle those things.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So last question, and this may be just kind of recap, but what are some things we can do to live counterculturally in this age of rage and anger in our culture?
I think it's important that we really listen to what that question was, because recognize that refusing to live in that loop of anger and outrage is countercultural. And that's what God calls us to be. And I think the biggest part of that, at least for me, is setting some clear criteria for what we care about and what doesn't matter to us, right? And that isn't to say, and I'm sure you'll get into this in other episodes or maybe not, but that's not to say that a Christian can't or shouldn't care about certain causes and that some aren't worth our time. But not all of them are, right? Not all things are worth our time, and certainly none of them can be worth our time if they conflict with our directive of souls. And if we commit ourselves to learning to love like Jesus, that becomes pretty clear, right? To be able to distinguish between those things. I was listening to your last episode, and was it your brother that was on?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. He said, one of the things I drew out of that is to be unswervingly allegiant to Jesus. I thought that was great because it's about him above everything else. How we care for others is a huge part of that. And we can't properly care about others if we're angry about things that ultimately don't matter, or we take up causes that have no value to the master.
Yeah. Yeah. You brought up so many good things there. And I think something that I kind of didn't think about, so I appreciate you bringing it up, is that there are good causes to be convicted about and to be take very seriously, talking about injustices that happen in our communities and in things around us. That's a good thing. And I don't think we're at all saying that you need to not do anything for the good of others, or to, if there's an injustice that's happening, you need to sit and do nothing and not post anything about it or whatever. But I think there is this very, very, very big distinction between that, something that maybe is happening in your community, or I guess nationwide, and something that really has no effect on you that's happening 2,000 miles away in Washington, D.C. There's a big difference. And I think that we understand the differences. We understand the difference between the two. We need to learn to love who's in front of us. What's the need in my neighborhood? What's the need in my community? So I think that we need to make that distinction. And I think just knowing when not to engage in certain things. And then I think being a peaceful presence, being that non-anxious presence, that's going to be seen. Jesus says, let your light shine before others so that others may see your good deeds and glorify God. Well, one of the ways we can shine our lights is by being a non-anxious, non-angry, rage-filled person in a culture that is all of these things. And I think that that's kind of what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. It's about just loving the people that are right in front of you, not being so caught up in what's going on in the world or the anger and the outrage of the latest trend or fad, and focusing on what's right in front of you and what God has put in place in your life right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. We're in Bible class a couple of weeks back, and one of our members at Hawesville brought up the idea of maybe we're not supposed to really know as much as we do know about things that we can't affect. And that really kind of struck home with me, because you're right. What can I really impact that's that far away? Aside from the God being involved in it, sure. Am I not supposed to love those and care about those that are right in front of me? That's the countercultural aspect of this, you know, making sure that we find our purpose in Christ above, and in some cases to the exclusion of everything else, above politics, above pop culture, above those things that are just happening all around us. And it's really, I think it comes down to, if we're really truly wanting to be countercultural in respect to anger and rage, don't get distracted. Romans 12:2 says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. It's countercultural to not be reactionary. It's countercultural to take time and think through whether our words or sharing those words of others is inflammatory and harmful. It's countercultural to say no to contributing to that. And it's countercultural to think from another person's perspective. And it's countercultural to be like Jesus.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Daniel, you said so many good things in this episode. And I just appreciate you and your ministry and your work that you do. And thank you so much for coming on the show again.
Well, thank you so much for having me, man. It's just, I really enjoyed it, and I always appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.